As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to The Athletic NBA Show. I'm Dave DeFore, joined by my good friend Keith Parrish as we close the books on another summer league and look ahead to what's to come this summer. We're going to talk a little bit about rule changes and then the FIBA World Cup, which is the only basketball we're going to have for like 3 or 4 months. So Keith, you're the Mr. Ref. We need to talk about these rule changes. Finally, the NBA going after some of the most egregious acts that occur on a basketball court on a daily basis. The flop. Is Marcus Smart going to be any good for the Memphis Grizzlies, Keith?
When you said the most egregious acts that occur on the basketball court, I thought you meant trying to draw charges and undercutting airborne shooters. You make a great question. Did the Grizzlies know that this flop rule would be implemented before they agreed to trade for Marcus Smart? I don't have the answer to that question, but I think I can get the answer. I think this one rule, among one of the two rules that the Board of Governors approved, I think it has its heart in the right place. I worry about its implementation. I saw this called one time in Summer League, and it was one of those plays where a guy got hit in the head, but his reaction was to throw his head back a little bit extra, and he got a technical foul. So the team that hit him in the head got an extra free throw and retained possession, which felt kind of extreme. And I didn't know. Again, I haven't seen the exact wording in the rule book now. Was that a proper application of the rule? And so there are still, I guess, a few questions I have about it.
Well, let's kind of go over the rule a little bit. It sounds pretty obvious. You get a technical foul if the referees deemed that you flopped, but it's in the game live, which I don't know if I love because it's a judgment call. And you know, we know that NBA referees haven't exactly been the best at judgment call. I mean, and not their fault. Human bodies that big, moving that fast.
I can't let that sentence just float out there. The NBA referees do a great job.
They do a great job. All right. But they're still, they make mistakes. They make mistakes.
And I think you're making a key point that the problem with the flop is not that the officials are seeing flops and not penalizing them. The problem with flopping is it deceives the official. And there's very little the official can do if a player is flopping to not be deceived. So I am, again, dubious that calling it live, they'll be able to spot it. Like if you knew they were flopping all these times, guess what? Flopping wouldn't be a problem. The idea is like, hey, that looked like a violent collision. I'm calling the offensive foul. Then you see on replay, oh, wow, Marcus Smart just launched himself into the stanchion with no contact whatsoever. This does not fix that whatsoever. I know they had the anti-flopping rule years ago where you got these like $5,000 penalties. They gave up. I do think flopping needs to be addressed, but I think this is going to be hard because, again, the problem we're dealing with is not the flops that the refs see. It's the fact that the flops are deceiving referees, and I don't see how this fixes that.
I mean, what's the solution? There is no perfect solution to it, right? I mean, again, you're trying to deceive the refs, and not just with flopping.
But the solution,
the fines didn't work, Keith. Right?
Right.
Number one, it probably wasn't enough money.
Sure.
But number two, it doesn't affect the game because the foul still called. You know, so whatever free throw still happened. Like it was after the fact, and so the win or loss has already been affected. I mean, would a better solution, Keith, be to, you know, maybe there's a replay official that deems something a flop later, and at the end of the game, you shoot all the technical free throws? That, I mean, you know, free throws
at
are so
end
exciting.
Of the game?
We got to get more free throws in the game, Keith. You know, that's what I get from this this flopping call.
I mean, I wonder, I do think there's going to be a lot of painful moments where they get it wrong, and we have these extra free throws and then extra possessions But maybe even with those accidental errors that are going to come with this, that maybe the players do start adjusting. I mean, frankly, I was dubious that the take foul rule would work effectively. I was worried we'd get more reviews. It would slow the game down just because players would still do it. The take foul rule was incredible. That rule change was actually great. It had the intended effect of making the game more watchable, and eventually the players stopped reaching out and grabbing guys. So maybe with this penalty, it will eventually reduce the number of flops. I just worry that it's not going to do it. I think it's still going to be the thing where, like you said, we get upset about the flops that are missed, and this is the flops are still going to get missed. I think a better solution, like maybe you don't find the guys, maybe you do something where a flop counts for your flagrant foul, technical foul points. It goes into that, or some other kind of point system where if you have an egregious flop, that they can say like, hey, you get four of those, you're suspended a game or something like that. Again, I don't know the CBA ramifications of where the league's allowed to suspend you for on the court stuff, because like the way the game is where, you know, you have to take charges, like because the rules say it's beneficial and you have to accentuate contact. Like
it doesn't get called if you don't fall down, Keith.
Exactly. Like you can't. I reffed high school basketball briefly, and I called a charge on a guy where the defender didn't fall down, and I wasn't sure I was going to get out of the gym. People were so furious, and I was like, he slammed into the guy's chest who had legal guarding position. That's an offensive foul. Like he displaced him, but the guy didn't fall down. And so the coach is like going nuts. And that's the problem. Also with offensive drives, our entire game is offensive players driving to the basket. Your James Harden's, your Dwayne Wade back in the day, you put the ball on the floor, you go into your defender, you initiate the contact as the offensive player. And then a lot of times you yell, you flail your arms, you throw yourself on the ground, every one of those things, hoping that it gets the whistle to give you those two free throws. None of those things are necessarily caused by the defender. It's the offensive player choosing to cause the contact and fall down. But again, those aren't flops. That's part of the game, you know? So I would love to see, you know me, we talk a lot. I would love to see an overhaul of the entire, like, defensive foul rules, offensive foul rules, like, but that is not this. This is, I think, a small measure trying to get out the most egregious of, like, if you fall down away from the play and someone sees it, then you get penalized. I guess I'm still skeptical it's going to be that effective. I'm also skeptical they stick with it. This feels like a November, December
sort
no. of thing.
So
and then it's
I
over.
I actually disagree, Keith. Remember when the point of emphasis was screening rules and movie screens?
Yeah.
And they did do a good job the first like month of that season. But the shooting foul thing did stick. I do think that for the most part, they've gotten better at that initiation of contact, not calling that when a guy's up in the air. And don't forget the kicking the feet out that they were awful about. I mean, of course, there's a couple of times where it happens. But I think for the most part, they've just gotten better. And again, I make this argument all the time. And I know that the league wants the refs to do everything by the book, black and white, but not use their judgment. But couldn't all of this, Keith, just be solved by allowing these men and women who are experts in the sport of basketball, love the game, been around it their whole lives, to use their instincts and their understanding of the sport to call the game in the spirit of the game?
No. You want refereeing to be an art and not a science. And I've heard it from Monty McCutcheon's lips.
This is a science. He wants black and white. He wants everything to be written down. And that's why it's hard. I mean, we like to emphasize a lot, refereeing professional basketball is impossible.
It's so hard.
And it's impossible.
If you've never refereed even like high school basketball, you do not realize it is hard even at that level. I mean, by the way, there's a ref shortage in this country because it's difficult to do. It takes a lot of expertise in the rules of the game.
I would say
lot of time, doesn't pay well at all, at least on lower levels. So we're not developing a lot of good new refs. I don't know, man. It's tough. Like,
I would say there's a referee shortage because basketball fans are unhinged and people don't treat each other well anymore.
Like, well, okay, that's fair. Okay,
like the
behavior
towards referees is a reason why there's a referee shortage. The NBA does as good a job as they can fulfilling this. They have a great pipeline set up. They're actually one of the reasons, I think, why, like, if you watch college basketball, you're like, hey, this refereeing isn't that great. Well, guess what? Once they're in the G League system, they're not allowed to work college anymore. Like, so, like, that is a reason why maybe we do have a shortage of refereeing. I admire the NBA and like the way they strive to keep getting better, to use technology, to serve the game, as Monty McCutchen says all the time. I just am skeptical that we're going to be able to spot the great, like you're going to know, if you knew Chris Paul was acting, you wouldn't give him the call. So I don't know how like you're going to spot a couple, but I think they're going to get it wrong a lot of times where a guy falls down and you're like, nope, he got smacked in the mouth. And yes, he threw his head back, but like you get smacked in the mouth, you're supposed to throw your head back.
Yeah, it's kind of how it works. By the way, would it completely infuriate you if I told you that I know of a former referee who cuts game film and helps players learn how to take advantage of referees?
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do.
Exactly.
That's literally like, you, if you're an NBA player, if you're a coach, if you work for a team, your job is to do whatever you can within the rules of the game to gain an advantage. And if that is to say, hey, guess what? These refs tonight don't call that many moving screens. We're going to set moving screens. And it's going to say, hey, this is what looks like a foul. This is how the referees are coached to call it. So if you do this, you might get the whistle. That's what everyone's doing their job. The officials are going to work as hard as they can to get it right. Teams are going to hire people to help them trick the referees. It's the way the game works.
All right. And the other announced rule change, and this one, man, this one's just obvious. And I'm not sure why they didn't implement this with the challenge system in the first place. But now, Keith, if you issue a coach's challenge and it's successful, you get to keep it. You get to use it again. Now, Keith, do you just get unlimited challenges if you're right all the time? Like, how far does this go up?
See, now that's, sir. You get one.
That seems unfair, right? You get two challenges, it seems, if you get the first one right. But why wouldn't you get a third? I mean, listen, I'm not saying referees are bad. I just gave them a ton of credit for how hard it is to do their job. But if a coach is very good at spotting referees' mistakes, why would you take away the challenge even on the second one? I mean, listen, they realize that it's weird for you to take away the challenge on a successful challenge. So a subsequent successful challenge should fall under the same purview. Thus, unlimited challenges, as long as you get them right. This is where it ought to be if we want it to be right.
No, this is where you have to balance your getting it right versus your entertainment product. This is why they got rid of reviewing all out of bounds calls in the final 2 minutes, which is great because it was miserable. It was a terrible idea. Just let the game go. So I think that's the limitation here. If you get your first challenge correct, you get one more. That's it. And also on your second challenge, you still lose your timeout even if you're right. Sorry. They put that in the press release. They're saying as far as the game flow reasons, they're going to take your second time out, even if you get two challenges right. I mean, I'm super excited, one, to see who's the first coach to get two challenges right in one game. My money's on Nick Nurse. He's been very good at challenges historically. Also, I'm excited now, like this rule is not going to cause you to probably challenge a block charge call, or even if your best player picks up a fourth foul in the first half, you're still probably going to save this challenge for something obvious, something totally right. Because still, if you miss the first one, guess what? You're done. So basically now, if you miss your first challenge, yeah, that's losing two challenges. That's a double loss. So it's still not going to be like, I don't know if it's going to cause that many more challenges, which is, I think, something that they cared about greatly. They don't want more challenges. We don't want that many stoppages. I guess, yes, it's good for the advertising partners to have more commercial time, but I think they're more interested in making the game presentable. And so I think this is a good improvement, but also you already said you wanted the referees to be artists, not scientists. Just let the referee work the game, man. It feels like it's your ball this time.
Now, so Keith, we've talked a lot over on Nerder about challenge sort of strategy. And for me, it's like, okay, if a challenge, it should theoretically either put points on the board or take points off the board. Or it's a sixth foul situation for a star player. But also, I think that there's a time component here, Keith, that second challenge costing you a timeout should play into your equation if you're a coach. Number one, if you're going to challenge something, I would have windows where you allow yourself to challenge. And then if it's outside that window, you don't use it. And that's timeout windows. If this is a time when you're scheduled to kind of take a timeout, might as well throw the challenge out there. If you have a play that you might be able to overturn that you feel pretty strongly about. And that way, if you do burn the challenge, you burn a timeout, but it was one that you were going to take anyway. How you feel about that?
Right. I hear what you're saying, but I still don't think you want to ever risk that challenge if you're not certain it's going to happen. If it is, you know, like you're right before the 3-minute mark of the fourth quarter and you know you're about to lose one of your timeouts, and then there is like a block charge play, it might be a play that involves points coming on the board or off the board or one of your best players picking up a fifth foul or something. Yeah, then you might do it, but you still got to hold that challenge in your back pocket for an out of bounds play in the final seconds. Cause we know what those are like. We know it could be a fingernail there. When you slow it down, you're like, okay, we get to keep the ball. So still keeping your challenge is super important. This is, I think, just going to solve in the second quarter. Everyone saw the ball go off a guy. You've already seen the replay on the Jumbotron. It's our basketball. Now I can call the timeout without worrying, oh, what if I'm going to need a challenge at the end of the game? So I do like the improvement there.
And let's talk a little bit about FIBA World Cup. I know we're a little early because we've got about 40 days to go before the tournament starts, but Team Canada has put out 18 players on their roster. And I'm assuming some of these young guys may not make it. But Keith, I'm kind of excited about this Canadian team. I feel like their top five matches up really well with just about everybody. They're a little short on bigs, but how do you feel about the Canadian World Cup roster?
I've been waiting for so long for Dylan Brooks to get on the Canadian national team, and I'm so fired up he's there.
And he's no longer a Grizzly though. Now it's Houston's.
I'm gonna ride for Dylan for a long time. The top of the roster, like you said, Dave. You look at the U.S. team, you look at the Canadian team. Which team has the best player? Is it not Canada with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
I mean, it certainly feels that way.
You could ask, like, who is the best player on Team USA? And the players I would consider, we can just say them. It's Paolo Banchero, Mikal Bridges, Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Haliburton, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, Jaren Jackson Jr., Cam Johnson, Walker Kessler, Bobby Portis, Austin Reeves. Ain't none of those players better than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Maybe in a vacuum, I might argue that my guy Jaren Jackson Jr. is the best player, but he's not a shot creator necessarily. Maybe it's Anthony Edwards is the best. Like, I'm not sure who the best player is on Team USA. And the idea of them not having the best player in the tournament is pretty fun. I mean, I guess they've been dealing with that a lot with the Giannis Antetokounmpo world, a Luka Doncic world, a Giannis Antetokounmpo world. Jokic world. Yeah.
It's but the Canadian basketball, Dylan Brooks, Lou Dort, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jamal Murray. I mean, they're
I mean,
guard
Jamal
play.
Murray and RJ the Barrett.
Their guard play. FIBA is dominated by guards. I think their guard play is going to be hugely important for this upcoming World Cup. And I mean, they can play Jamal Murray and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I'm assuming they're going to start together.
No, I mean, that is dream stuff. That's dream stuff for an NBA team. I mean, both those guys can play off the ball. Like, both those guys are fine as, like, you know, playing the one or the two. I'm thinking this Canadian lineup, if all these guys are healthy and all these guys end up committing to play and make the final roster, like a Shai, Jamal Murray, maybe RJ Barrett, Dylan at the four with, say, Kelly Olynyk or Dwight Powell at the five, that is a fierce lineup for this World Cup.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And on the American side, I mean, what's your top five here, Keith? I mean, Anthony Edwards, I assume, is in there. Jaren Jackson Jr., Cam Johnson, maybe?
I mean, it can go a lot of ways. I would say for me,
Mikal Bridges, yeah.
I'd imagine Jalen Brunson and Mikal Bridges are just going to be like superstar monsters for the American team. I'd probably go Jalen Brunson, Anthony Edwards, Mikal Bridges, Jaren, and then like who's my fifth guy? Maybe Brandon Ingram, maybe Banchero just for his size. So like I think the U.S. team like are going to be favorites and rightly so, but it's going to be tough. And especially like there's 30 other countries they also have to deal with. But like just the North American battle of Canada, Team USA, it's going to be all NBA guys. It's going to be super exciting. And like, you know, in a tournament format where it's like just one game, it wouldn't be shocking for Team Canada to like blow out Team USA just because like if your shots are going in and you can put out a five-man lineup, basically that I would say is almost even. Maybe the overall talent level is more for Team USA, but it's all about fit. You know, basketball is about fit. And like, I do think Team Canada could definitely, go on a long run in this World Cup.
Are there any other countries that you're interested in checking out in the World Cup? I mean, France is very interesting to me, although they'd be a lot more interesting if Victor Wembanyama was going to play, but you know, they've got some guys that I like. I mean, Nando De Colo kind of on his last legs. How about Slovenia? I mean, Luka Doncic, could he carry them all the way through?
I mean, there's always all those European teams that are so exciting. And basically, I would have to like check the rosters and remind myself one, which countries are actually in it and who am I looking forward to? I mean, Spain is always tough. And like you have Serbia and Slovenia, like you said, like those teams are great. Greece always normally has just some fun stuff. And it's like, it basically comes down to like which guys are going to play. And then it's like, which guys get hot? And like, you know, like, three-point shooting is such a big deal in the NBA and FIBA basketball now that like anytime a team is just on fire from the three-point line, they could win. But I have totally like digested the Canadian and U.S. rosters. Now that Summer League is wrapping up, I'm ready to focus on digesting the rest of the countries who are going to be playing and get fired up for this tournament.
I don't know, man. Keith, I'm really liking this Georgian team for some reason. I don't know why, but they're looking pretty strong.
I hear they're strong.
Big team, you know, FIBA rewards that quite a bit. Keith, yep. Any other NBA stuff that has caught your eye over the course of Summer League? I mean, it feels like Summer League has been going on for about a month, but that's because I've been here the whole time.
That's right. That's right.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah. I think the most interesting thing for me, NBA related, is like we end basically the entire season cycle with the wrap up of Summer League is just maybe the unrestricted free agents the restricted free agents who are still floating out there. Like, what's going on with PJ Washington? Why is no one interested in Ayo Dosunmu? Like, I think that's kind of weird. And like, what's going to happen there? Is there still someone who's going to swoop in and do like maybe work out a sign and trade with like the Bulls or the Hornets, or the Bulls, like, are the Bulls and Hornets trying to wait them out for something? Like, that is kind of the only, unfinished business that I can think of right now. Of course, I'm still a little fried from being in Vegas and then flying out. And now I'm actually in Eastern time and my body's very confused.
Well, listen, at some point we expect a James Harden trade or a Damian Lillard trade or something
That's right.
And I don't know if we're going to get, I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon. This feels like it's dragging out through the summer. And do you envision us getting into training camp and James Harden and Damian Lillard still being in Philly and in Portland?
Well, I mean, it's not like James Harden has a history of this. So, yes, I can imagine James Harden certainly being in training camp in Philly.
But wait.
Yeah.
Because there's a narrative that's going around where it's, you know, very Daryl Morey has shown a willingness to get uncomfortable. And I think the thing that keeps coming up, and at least with me and you, is that this will be 2 out of 3 uncomfortable seasons in the last 3. The Ben Simmons saga, obviously, which brought James Harden there. And now James Harden trying to leave. You got to start thinking about Joel Embiid in all of this. And
right.
If I'm running that team, that's my major concern. How do I keep him happy? How do I make it so that when his time comes, he doesn't want to leave? And I don't think that they can let this get to training camp. I think you've got to have an idea of what this team is going to be heading into the season. Come playoff time, they've got a brand new coach. So they're already going to be up against it from that standpoint. I think they've got to do it, and sooner rather than later, Keith.
I wonder like what factors are going to change for these teams, because it doesn't seem like there's going to be that much extra stuff. And maybe it is Morey feels like the position he has to play, the way he has to play his hand, is just wait because the offer he wants is not there. And it does feel like the Harden situation is one that maybe could have some kind of reconciliation, even though if it's not likely. So like, again, I can see, I hear your point. I think it's very valid about like worrying about just the atmosphere on the Sixers and wanting to make sure Joel Embiid is happy. But like, Joel Embiid is going to be happy with, I think, getting the best deal possible and winning. I think the flip side of the Portland thing is like, you don't want Dame in. I don't think you want Dame around training camp. Like, that just seems.
And see, I feel the opposite. I see Damian Lillard. I mean, Damian Lillard has been a professional. I mean, a consummate professional. And James Harden is kind of, you know, I'm not going to say he's done anything. James Harden's not done anything bad, but James Harden has certainly, when he's not happy, we know what that looks like on the basketball court. And it's not exactly winning basketball. I don't think Damian Lillard's going to be on the basketball court and pouting. That guy is, I mean, he's a gamer and maybe, yeah, he hasn't won a title or anything like that, but you can't say he ever cheats the game when he's out there.
Well, I mean, unless you're a rules aficionado, I wouldn't say James. I guess James. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like turn it over, man. If you're going to rebuild, turn it over to Scoot. Let Scoot do his thing. I mean, maybe Damian Lillard would not stand in the way of that. Maybe he'd be a good locker room presence and a leader for all that. But like, it feels like, I don't know, maybe this is just my impression from watching this play out in the media and such. It's like, turn the page, guys. Like, let's just do it. Also, like, don't these teams want to be like, hey, man, do you really want to be talking about this in August? Let's just get it over with. Everybody go where you're going. Go to your off season, relax, you know, start planning on the next year. Don't drag this out, but who knows? Maybe we've had these trades happen you know, any number. We had it happen in September, I feel like, where it's like, oh, the deal finally went down. So good luck, Joe Cronin. Good luck, Daryl Morey, and whoever else. Pat Riley, who are we wishing luck? Who's the third team in these things to make this finally happen? The Clippers going to swoop in?
I feel like Oklahoma City is going to get, like, draft picks. What? Whatever deal happens.
Is Oklahoma City, come on, man. You have the picks. Get some good play. Go get Pascal Siakam for fun. Hook up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Let's go win some basketball games. You got Chet now? Let's not win 42 games. Let's win 52 games. Step up. Come on, Presti. Throw some picks down.
All right. That's going to do it for Not the Saturday Slam and Jam. I'm Dave DeFore. That was Keith Parrish. Thank you for keeping it locked in to the Athletic NBA Show.